Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Simon.
And I'm Tom.
We're just nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. So Simon, are you ready?
I think so.
Tom, are you ready?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm ready, and if you guys are ready, let's slowly descend into madness.
I'm not sure it was even that slow.
As we dive into this week's episode. We played Eldritch Horror. We played as a series where we talk about an epic board game that we played this week. And this week it's the globe-trotting, monster-fighting, mystery-unraveling, sanity-draining Lovecraftian epic, Eldritch Horror. In this episode, we're going to be diving into the things we liked and breaking down the elements that make it great. Because at the end of the day, we only play awesome games. And Eldritch Horror truly is the definition of madness. Eldritch Horror is a cooperative game of terror and adventure in which 1 to 8, yeah, right, players. What's that? Yeah, okay,
fine. I've tried it. I wouldn't recommend it.
yeah, fantasy flight, whatever you say. 1 to 8 players take the role of globe-trotting investigators working to solve mysteries, gather clues, and protect the world from an ancient one intent on destroying our world. Each ancient one comes with its own unique decks of mystery and research cards, which draw you deeper into the lore surrounding each loathsome creature. So supposedly the player count is 1 to 8. Realistically, it's 1 to 5 at most. Designed by Corey... Wait, here we go.
Go on then, embarrass yourself.
Konietzka. He might be Czech, in which case that's Corey Konietzka. And Nikki Valens. It's published by Fantasy Flight Games. So, let's talk, as we always do, about the components and art design.
Oh, boy. It's not that big a box, looking at it.
No.
Compared to something like Ankh or Rising Sun, This is a relatively low-profile box. But my God, there's a lot of stuff in here.
Oh, they ram it tight, don't they?
It's a box that is completely filled to the brim with tokens and cards and all sorts of bits and pieces, all sort of set around this lovely world map.
Yeah, there's an absolute shed load of stuff. And I suppose when we're thinking about a game of this scope, especially these days, typically you associate it with a shitload of miniatures. This is not that. Fantasy Flight, generally at least for their board game productions, isn't lots of miniatures. You get cardboard standees, you get cardboard tiles, you get cardboard tokens. There's just a lot of cardboard and a lot of paper.
800 million cards.
There is a deck for everything in here, isn't there?
Yeah, you name it. There's, oh my goodness.
You've got your main player card, which is a nice little almost passport size.
Mm-hmm.
You've then got conditions, you've got spells, you've got items, you've got quests, you've got encounters, you've got a mythos deck.
Yeah. And the encounter decks come in 6 different flavors plus a unique deck that is specific for each ancient one. So there's a whole shed load of different encounters you can have every time you play the game.
Did we say conditions?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so and the conditions come in different sets. Yeah. And they're individual as well.
Yeah, so the condition cards and the spell cards are a little bit special. They're these like they're the little sort of Fantasy Flight tiny cards.
Yeah, the Euro mini
side. Yeah, the Euro mini side ones. And they're double-sided, so whenever you gain one of them, you're only allowed to look at one side. So you might have 5 or 6 different cards that show the same front-facing,
side. Like could be, for example,
a dark pact or a blessed condition
or
some sort of injury. And under certain conditions, you flip it over and you're allowed to look at the other side, and the other side is unique.
Yeah.
So your 5 or 6 cards of the same type are actually individual, because when you flip them over, they have different effects.
I'll tell you what, upsettingly, for a Fantasy Flight production, we don't have custom dice.
No. Standard D6s.
For an FF, I'm very upset.
They're dickhead dice, there's no denying that.
Yeah. I would have liked some sort of fancy dice, because you can imagine, because we'll talk about the mechanics later, successes in this game are hard to come by.
Yeah.
So a set of regular dice and a set of blessed dice or a set of cursed dice would be
nice. I don't know whether it's just an online thing, but we played this game quite a few times on Tabletop Simulator during the end of the world.
Yes.
During appropriately so.
Yeah.
And the Tabletop Simulator version comes with sort of colour-coded dice with success or failure shown on them. Depending on whether you're blessed or cursed or have neither, they're different coloured dice.
So it may well be an expansion.
They may be something that you can buy, actually. I hadn't thought about that.
But at least not in the base game, it's not. So that's pretty much the bulk of the components, to be fair. You have some random D6s, a shitload of tokens, an unbelievable amount of different cards.
I made a note, actually. So there's more than 300 cards in the base game.
Bloody hell.
And this is a game that has something like 7 or 8 expansions now.
Wow.
Plus tokens in the base game is more than 250.
Wow, okay.
It's one of those games where you open up the box and you've got 20 bags of stuff.
Yeah, basically.
And you've decanted yours into a neat little, effectively a token store, haven't you?
Yeah, without that,
you'd have piles and
stuff everywhere. That was a Hobbycraft purchase, that. Just lots of little dividers.
It's like a little button tray
like that. Exactly, one of those. You also get a humongous, and as you noted when I got it out, Simon, bigger than you remember.
Yeah, it's like
so to speak.
Probably 2 by 3 feet in size. And as Tom said at the top, it's a map of the world with these interconnected trail lines of either
boats
or trains or tracks. Mm. You've got the main cities denoted, and then there's various junctures where there's places out at sea and different exploration points to get to, and you've got Antarctica down the bottom, which, as we all know, is one of the main residences of the Deep One.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't clear already by the name Eldritch Horror, this is based off of the Lovecraftian mythos. So Lovecraft's entire, I suppose, back catalogue sort of blended into one board game.
Yeah.
I think Cthulhu, he's the, I suppose, the most famous of the...
I think it's sort of, yeah, probably the most well-known, but you get...
He's the Justin Timberlake of the NSYNC, that is Lovecraft.
Yeah, I think there's 6 different ancient ones in the core game, and then every expansion adds more. So there's loads of choices, and every time you break out one of the ancient ones, they all play a little bit differently. They change the shape of the game a bit. They have their own unique objectives.
That's right.
And unique encounters.
That's right.
That sort of alter how the game will run.
Let's quickly pivot onto the art design of the game. It's beautifully sort of 1920s coloured, right, with this...
It's sepia
toned. Yeah.
For so many different types of cards, each one has its own graphic style. Each one is notably different from the other. So we say, you know, there's 6 different types of encounter card. Each one you can tell from the back which one you're picking up. Most of the cards have some kind of depiction of a character or an effect happening on it. They're all really nicely detailed little oil paintings. Each of your character standees, which matches your player card, again, looks like a cool action pose or something that evokes that period and the characterization. So you've got your martial artist in her nice silken robes with a handout in a kung fu style.
Mm.
I was playing as the old wizened researcher with the long beard, reminding me of Rasputin if he'd made it to a slightly older age.
As is typical of Fantasy Flight's productions, lavish in its art design and wonderfully consistent. You have individual monster art for each of the monster tokens, of which there's a buttload.
Some of them are just really, really horrific. Horrifying. Yeah.
They're remarkably detailed for the size of the cards and the tokens as well, I think. Looking at some of these monsters in particular, they're only an inch square tile. On the front, you've got the name, the character art, a symbol or more than one symbol, depending. And then on the reverse, you've got a huge amount of detail, which uses quite a bit of symbology, which I think we'll cover shortly.
Yeah.
Again, more text and some numbers relating to strength and power and so on. So there's a lot contained on these really quite small tiles.
Yeah.
Very reminiscent, and I suppose I'll mention this now as much as anywhere, part of this Fantasy Flight genre, I'm as familiar with this as I am with Mansions of Madness,
yeah,
which uses a lot of the same mechanics, and they do have the plastic miniatures for the monsters.
Right.
Whereas this one has stuck with the card tokens.
Let me quickly explore that thought for a moment. Can you imagine if this was published by Come On Games? Can you imagine?
Every monster would be a miniature. Every character would be a miniature. And I think just in the core game, there's probably like 20 different characters.
I'm glad it's not.
There's so many with all the expansions.
I mean, you've got character standees. And I like standees. It's actually one of the things I like about Dead of Winter, oddly enough, is that it has these lovely standees for everything. So
it's almost reminiscent of our childhoods, although far higher quality than the cheap cardboard cutouts that were character standees back in the day.
Quite.
Not flimsy, that's for sure.
No, absolutely not. These are robust, high-density card of some description.
Should we move on to the core mechanics of the game, chaps? I don't even want to ask this question.
Go on.
How do you not
lose Eldritch Horror is far more of an apt question than how do you win.
You hope for the best.
Okay. Simon, how do you win a game of Eldritch Horror?
Rumour has it, the ancient texts speak of a rare once per century occurrence. Where you don't go completely mad and die.
Yeah.
In so doing, you complete the three mandatory quests which are revealed throughout the game.
Yeah, mysteries.
Yeah, three mandatory... Yeah, that's right. Mandatory quests, mysteries. Once done, you win the game, essentially. And you have to do it within a certain time limit. The time limit is driven by what's called the Mythos deck. But you also have a secondary timer, which is a doom counter.
Yeah, it's one giant juggling act.
Yeah.
Essentially, you have to complete your mysteries, which are ancient one specific. You have to complete three mysteries within a certain time limit, limited by primarily the doom track, which is a countdown to when the ancient one is going to wake up and either come and eat you or just drive everyone insane globally instantly.
Yeah.
You know, you just lose very quickly in that instance. And while you're doing that, you have to juggle everything else that's happening at the same time whilst trying to collect enough upgrades, items, allies,
resources, clues,
in order to be able to deal with the encounters and the horrible monsters and things that you're going to be fighting along the way.
It's absolutely horrendous. So let's talk about that in a little bit more detail. So we've got that doom countdown. Doom will tick down under a few different circumstances, and it will generally only happen during what's called the Mythos phase. So the game is split up into several phases, the first being the player action phase, upon which each of the players at the table will take two actions. And let's talk about those things. What sorts of things can you do on your turn in Eldritch Horror?
Not enough. Never feels like enough.
No, two feels
very
like
limited.
Bugger all.
Yeah.
You've got a basic move action, which is one space. You can prepare to travel, which generally essentially means you can move twice.
Yeah, within a certain parameters along either shipping routes or rail routes.
Yeah.
You can take a rest, a much needed rest, again with certain conditions being met, i.e. you're not in a monster space.
Yeah.
That gains you some health and some sanity back.
Yep. Pitifully little.
Pitifully little, not enough.
Compared to the rampant rate at which you can lose your health and sanity, the ability to gain it back feels purposefully underwhelming. You have character-specific actions. So these will be something on your player card which say once per turn you can do this. Mm-hmm. This is probably where the fun key part of the game comes from. And you go, oh, wow, that's an awesome thing you can do.
Yeah.
Every character sort of has their own little special abilities. I think most of the characters have some sort of passive ability and then an action that they can do.
A thing that you can do as one of your two actions.
Which is quite useful.
A bit like Pandemic, if you play Pandemic.
Yeah.
It's something that you and no one else can do, or that you can do better than anyone else at the table.
Yeah.
And undoubtedly there'll be certain combinations of characters that will work far better, both on their own and in conjunction with the team.
And the answer is always Charlie Kane and anyone else.
Absolutely. You've got what's called component actions, which is one of the things that you might have picked up during the game, right?
Yeah, so the items, various assets, artifacts, spells, many of them require you to take an action to use them.
Exactly that. And, oh, you can also trade on your turn?
You can trade if you ever get anywhere near anyone else while you're running screaming around the map. Yeah, yeah, that's an option.
It's a world map, so you're generally going to be dealing with a shitload of threats simultaneously. But if you are on the same space, you can trade stuff.
If you're in a city, you can acquire assets.
Ah, that's an important one. Mm. So you start the game with a character unique item or two, and during the game you can acquire more stuff which will help you fight whatever the world looming threat is, and that's dealt out into a shared draft that you can acquire.
The reserve.
Yeah. The reserve, yeah, exactly. So once on a city space, you can test one of your skills, your influence skill, to determine how many things you can buy or the value of things that you can buy.
And there'll be items, allies, services, various different sort of things that you can combine together for different effects.
And they'll give you bonuses on other dice rolls. They'll give you a whole bunch of different effects depending on what they are.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately the whole game is about trying to shore up or improve your abilities as much as possible to be ready to, you know, as a pathetic mortal
to
then go and have a fist fight with Cthulhu at the end of the game.
It really does feel like slapping a whale at the end of it.
I think you threw kerosene at Cthulhu at the very end of the game, right?
Yeah, he did the most damage to him.
Other action, which was pretty vital, and you said this is from an expansion, although we've always played with it from what I've known, is the focus action. This is essentially giving yourself a reroll.
This, I think, is an example of an expansion patching the original game.
It really helps resolve an issue in the base game.
Yeah, definitely. So, and we'll talk about clues in a little bit, but I want to quickly pivot because we talked about when you acquire assets, you test your influence. Let's talk about those skills, right? Every player has the same set of skills, which are
lore, influence, observation, strength, and willpower, or books, handshakes, eyeballs, flexing, and haircuts.
Exactly that. And
I'll put a picture up on Instagram to clarify that. But yeah. This the iconography used to describe each of these is
test haircuts.
Test haircuts, exactly. Each one will have a base value of between 1 and 4, and each character has a different variation on that theme. So, say for example, Charlie Kane, my character, the politician, had a very high influence, but an absolutely terrible strength. Tom's character was...
Lily, the martial artist, so she had very good strength. Yep. And actually, she had reasonably good will. She was just all round quite good for combat, but she was kind of garbage at observation and lore and doing
and
other encounters.
Yeah. Yep, got you. So it gives you a really nice, varied amount of characters. And there's quite a few to choose from.
Loads.
Yeah, it's a really good range, actually. And each with their own kind of characterization. It gives you a tiniest bit of a story, I feel.
Yeah, we'll talk about the lore in this game later, but it is dripping in flavor text. It's everywhere.
I love it. You go to the encounter deck, and every single encounter deck references something from the Cthulhu mythos. If you've read like any of the books
or even seen any short story, or any media, anything.
There's games, populist and media, all sorts of stuff now. There's loads and loads of references to stuff from the Cthulhu mythos.
Yeah. So when you're testing these particular skills, which he talked about, you're essentially going to roll a number of dice equal to your value in that skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you're getting into a fist fight, you'll almost certainly be rolling the number of dice represented in your strength score and then trying to beat the value on the card that you're fighting, the monster that you're fighting.
Yeah.
If you're trying to do some study or research, you'll be testing your lore. So you'll be rolling the number of represented on your book, plus or minus any modifiers from items you hold or effects currently on you.
Rerolls and all sorts of other things. It's quite a simple mechanic. It's essentially you roll a number of dice, you're looking for hits or successes, which is a 5 or a 6.
It's part of the inbuilt difficulty of the game that you'll only get a success a third of the time.
Yeah, and you know, to then
wait,
to then
it's as many as a third.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't feel like as many as that. I know.
Well, yeah, I think Simon had a built-in curse. but there are conditions that modify how easily you or how difficult it is for you to score a success. So
yeah.
That might also change the target number of the dice that you need to roll. But generally speaking, yeah, you're looking at a five or a six for a hit on a number of D6s.
If you're buying stuff, you might test your influence to buy stuff in the action phase. But for the most part, you're going to test those skills in the encounter phase, which is the next phase of the game.
Yeah, weirdly, your player action phase is almost the prep stage.
Yeah. Yes.
And then it's getting you ready for when all hell breaks loose, almost literally, on
yeah.
the board.
So wherever you end your actions for the turn, you will then have an encounter of some description. If you're in a random sea space or a city or one of the named sort of represented cities, you will draw a card from the corresponding deck. You will have an encounter that is absolutely full of lore and references and a little bit of storyline.
Shed loads of flavor text, yeah.
You have an encounter. It will normally say, this thing is happening. Test a specific skill. If you succeed, you probably get something.
Get a benefit.
If you fail, you might have a downside. Not necessarily guaranteed, but it's a sort of a pass-fail sort of system where you're testing specific skills. So obviously, the better you are at a given skill or a range of skills, the more likely you are to be able to succeed at the encounters.
There's two base types of encounter, which are complex encounters and simple encounters.
Yeah.
Your simple encounters is you're going to have a test, one of your skills, pass-fail.
Yeah.
Then you have some of the more complex encounters, which are a bit more interesting. Things like trying to close the portals and gates which open up in the game and spawn countless monsters onto the map, which we literally ran out of monsters almost this game.
London has fallen.
London has definitely fallen.
It is stacked with monsters.
We managed to get almost every single gate open and almost every monster on the board simultaneously. That's not a good thing.
No, it's not. And it's also some of the clue encounters, I think, are complex encounters. And all that means is it's a split path success-fail.
Yeah, multi-step. So you normally have to do two tests, sort of pass-fail and then pass-fail on the second part.
And I think that all really adds up to the storytelling element of this. It's not just go here and succeed or fail. It's go here and see if you can even mentally withstand the thing that you have now encountered. And if you do withstand that, then see how effective you can be at beating it, killing it, opening it, or whatever else. It's not just a case of... Yeah.
Can you solve this puzzle that's going to drive you insane?
Go here and pick up the book. No, it's go here, encounter the book, see whether it destroys your mind from the inside out. And if so, then see if you understand the lore that you find within inside it, which will then give you the clues you need to beat the mystery that you're currently trying to solve. It's
you're
detailed.
Right. It's the amount of theming is dripping. And I think it's important at this note to talk about how this is about as Ameritrashy as Ameritrash games get.
Oh, God, it is so swingy.
It's super, it's swingy.
We just got shafted in like the first two rounds
by
Dice
Rolls. We
managed
to pull it back almost, but then...
I'm amazed we lasted as long as we did.
Yeah, it's trashy, pulp fiction, adventuring, theme-filled. You know, don't go into this expecting a dry, balanced experience. This is all about the stories that you create at the table, about reading that flavor text to get a feel for the atmosphere it's trying to create.
Yeah, there's so much randomization between the 20 different decks on the table and
dice rolling balls,
and combinations of monsters and heroes that might appear. And
this is all about the stories. It's all about the game.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you need to immerse yourself and surrender to the game effectively. If you're trying to play this as I might first have approached it, in a more reserved fashion, trying to be very logistical, it just you need some logistics to work out what might be your best route. But the way the game plays, there's a limit to how actually useful that'll be. And you need to just go with the flow.
Lean into the madness,
I have owned this game for many years and played it many, many, many times. And I think the approach that I have these days is just resignation from the start. I probably have played this game upwards of 30 times and maybe succeeded 3 times.
I mean, I'm a massive fan of difficult co-ops, and this is probably at the top of the pile.
Just because it's so unpredictable.
It's unpredictable, and it's deliberately bastardy.
It's difficult. Yeah, it's supposed to be difficult.
It's supposed to be. It's, well, if you've read any of Lovecraft's books, no one wins.
Yeah.
Everyone dies or goes mad.
The best you can hope for is to further the aims of the group whilst going insane or dying.
Yes.
Yeah, the one time I've played this where the team won was because I effectively had to sacrifice myself in doing so. Like, well, we technically did it, but
do you know
on
what?
A personal level,
yeah.
I'm dead.
Interestingly, as part of this game, when your character dies, that's not the end. You advance Doom, the Doom track goes down, as we talked about, but you just crack on, you get another character, and they join the fray. And you could still win easily.
You can have some seriously high body counts.
In fact, the death is an expected part of the experience.
Yeah, and I had not expected that when we first played this.
You were like, what the hell?
I was like, oh, this feels disappointing. And then you're like, oh, you can start a new character. Like,
If you've ever played the Call of Cthulhu tabletop role-playing game or any of the other sort of Cthulhu mythos games, you know that you go into the game as a mortal, as a puny human, trying to grasp at things far beyond your reasoning, and you have a tiny little pool of health and sanity, and it's just a race to see which one runs out first.
Oh my god, it's just awful. Swinging it back round to the initial bit, this encounter phase, the second phase of the game. The encounter that you have will depend on where you have landed on the game board, so where you've chosen to be. You'll either be in a city, you'll either be in the sea, or you'll be in the wilderness. And your space will also, it may or may not have monsters on it, it may or may not have a clue token on it, it may or may not have a rumor or other token on it. And the encounter that you have will depend on those things that you are in the space with.
If there are monsters, you must fight the monsters.
You will fight the monsters.
If there are no monsters and there's a clue and a rumor and you're on a named city, you can
and
pick
a gate.
Which, and a gate, you pick which one you want to do. You only do one of them. If you do a combat encounter and you succeed in killing all of the monsters, you can then do a non-combat encounter, but you will only do one non-combat encounter.
Exactly that. Do you want to talk about combat a little bit? How's that work?
The combat, again, is reasonably straightforward. It's not super complicated. Each of the monster tiles on the back, because they're double-sided.
It's got like a horror value.
It's got a little set of stats. So they have what's called horror, which is the amount of sanity they can drain from you. And you go into the combat, first thing you do is do a willpower test because you have to try not to go insane before you even get a chance to fight these things.
Summon your courage and will to just look at it.
Right at the end of the game, everyone runs at Cthulhu, we go insane.
Because he's...
We didn't even reach him.
He's an unfathomable being, we all went mad.
Never mind, whatever. So you have to first test willpower and overcome a certain amount of terror. The more successes you get, the less sanity you lose. If you get enough, you will lose no sanity. Having succeeded there and hopefully not gone insane, you then do a strength test.
And that's when you can actually damage the
you
monster,
actually get,
remove
get
it from
to
the board.
Fight the monster, with whatever weapons you might have to hand. You make a strength test, and again, similarly, you have to overcome a certain amount of damage that the monster can deal to you. The more successes you get, the less damage you take. And simultaneously, the more damage you inflict on them. Mm. And they have a little toughness value, which is basically their hit points as well. So if you deal enough damage with your strength check, you take no damage and also potentially kill them at the same time.
It's rough going.
It is. And then some of the monsters have various passive or active
abilities
as well.
Or when they spawn on the board.
Yeah,
or
they might appear and chase after someone. Or
in the next phase of the game, they might do something horrible.
Yep.
It's very nice, very varied, very difficult, but super fun. I mean, I really like this game, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And monsters will keep being spat out of these gates that will appear on the board.
The longer you leave the gates unattended, the more monsters appear, and they slowly spread all over the place, and then you can't deal with
the number,
all the stuff that's happening, and Doom accelerates, and it just gets out of hand. Like I said before, it's basically one giant juggling act trying to balance between completing the objectives of the game and not losing in the meantime.
Do you guys want to talk about the mythos phase?
Must we?
This is the Cthulhu does stuff phase. Or depending on the great old one that you've decided to fight against. In our game, we played against Cthulhu and it was horrible. And this phase is basically drawing a card from his own special deck and then enacting a bunch of effects.
No.
No, it's not that.
So, so the Mythos deck is built from a common deck, and there are three colours of Mythos cards, blue, green, and yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of the game, when you pick an ancient one, the deck is then built out of a number of blue, green, and yellow cards, depending on which ancient one you pick. And they are organised into tiers. You have like a stage one, a stage two, and a stage three, with variable numbers of cards.
Oh, it gets progressively more shit. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets progressively worse as you go on. And each of the cards is then sort of made up of a number of different components. Along the top of the card, you have symbols. And they basically, you run from sort of left to right and you trigger each of the symbols.
So wait, Tom, are you saying that you draw a card and then you enact the various effects?
Yeah, you draw the card and then what you do is you read the card and do the stuff on the card.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're at this point thinking, what the hell are they all talking about? Sitting next to Tom, looking at the cards over his shoulder, but...
Do the things on the card.
Yeah, there's a number of symbols and a bunch of text. You do it in order. It is a procedural thing.
Yeah.
But each one is quite varied.
Yeah,
and
in depth sometimes.
Without having it in front of you and following the process yourself, it's very much a case of, oh, a load of shit just happened.
Yeah.
How much more dead am I than I was before we take this card out?
Certain things will or will not happen in each Mythos phase. Sometimes you will have what's called Reckoning, which is basically any of the nasty red symbols on any of the cards or tiles or monsters on the boards may trigger.
Yeah.
But you might also have a Mythos phase where there's no nasty red symbol and you just don't do that thing.
Yeah, exactly that. Or maybe the Mythos phase will spit out another gate.
Yeah, or we'll create some horrible plague that we then all bleed to death.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nasty
that
as well.
That sucked. Or just not allow you to rest.
Yeah, you can't rest whilst bleeding to death. Yeah, good combination. Yeah, thanks, game. if you survive through the various symbols, you then have a little bit of flavour text, and there is an event. And the events can range in sort of magnitude. Some of them are very, very bad and entirely negative, and some of them are not so bad and might actually even be slightly positive.
Yeah, but it's like one in every five cards might throw you a bone.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
This one I'm looking at right now is called The World Fights Back, and it says each investigator gets to basically recover either some health, some sanity, or discard a monster from the board.
Where the bloody hell was that
That one was right after we died.
Oh, of course. Of course it was.
Gods damn it.
So it's rough. That Mythos phase is brutal. You draw that card from the old one's deck, and there's a heap of different effects potentially on those cards that you'll trigger. If the symbol isn't there, you don't trigger that effect. If the symbol is there, you do, and hope for the best.
Yeah, it's, as I mentioned earlier, it feels like there's a lot of different symbols in this game, which I think is why I struggle sometimes to keep up a little.
It's
probably because I'm not running the game, if you will. Either yourself, Wayne, or Tom have been...
I think it's because I've played it a lot of times, it all flows, but
I
can see it being overload easily.
For time, if nothing else, it's a lot easier for someone with experience to maintain the running of the game than from someone new like me or relatively new to try and work out. It's not impossibly hard to pick up. Obviously, the game is run by millions of people around the world and it's very popular, but it does take some getting used to picking up that symbol and going, what does that mean?
It's not a lightweight game, and we'll talk about that later.
Yes.
That's for sure. Let's quickly talk about how you can lose the game, because we talked about how you can win the game, which is mostly just completing the three mysteries. Right, or the three mandatory quests. If you don't do that and doom runs down, depending on the Great Old One, either the world ends and you lose, or the Great Old One might emerge. In this case, Cthulhu emerges from the depths and you get one more chance to try and kill him before you all go mad.
Yep.
The other ways that you might lose the game are...
There are some Mythos cards which introduce rumours that are persistent, ongoing cards that may cause you to lose the game.
Exactly that.
This one, for example. We had a giant spider that was also on the map that we were far too busy trying to deal with Cthulhu to worry about.
Yeah.
That basically said, if you don't deal with this guy in time, after three reckonings, so three reckoning symbols on Mythos cards, you lose. You just lose.
You just
straight away
lose.
And that could happen on the very first Mythos phase of the game.
Yeah.
And then you just lose.
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
Totally balanced.
Yeah, balanced, absolutely. Just one more thing I want to talk about for the mechanics is those double-sided condition cards, those double-sided spell cards. We mentioned it briefly at the beginning of the podcast, but during the game, if you fail certain events during the encounter phase, you might pick up a condition, like an injury. So say, for example, a leg injury. There's a stack of leg injuries that you can draw from. So when you get one, you just take one from that stack. And each one has its own kind of individual other side. So the front side is the same.
It says, do not turn this card over until a certain condition is met.
But when we talked about the reckoning, right? So when that reckoning happens during the mythos phase, Cthulhu's turn, you flip that card over and bad stuff will happen. And depending on the one that you've picked, will depend on the effect. So this one, for example, is a strange remedy. You hop forwards, trying to keep your weight on your good foot while you search for a doctor that can treat you. Lose a health. Oh, thanks. You may become delayed to discard this card. So the game will allow you to then get rid of this if you take some time, basically skipping your next action phase to then get rid of it. And if I draw the next one, same thing. Leg injury. This one is an infected wound. As you remove the blood-soaked bandages, the wound oozes a foul yellow pus. Ew. The pungent scent of the infection causes your head to swim, and you nearly vomit. Gain an illness condition, and then discard this card. So that one will give you a different condition, but you get rid of the leg injury.
Yeah, these things kind of stack or bleed into each other. Yeah. So if you're casting a spell, it's not just a case of, I have this spell and I cast it. It's, I'll see how well I cast this spell. If I don't do particularly well, I might gain the effect, but also unleash a curse on myself. Wayne, you picked up a curse at some point, which you didn't see the back of, but I did through a character thing. This was Curse of the Serpent. Snakes and lizards seem to gather wherever you are. You sense something lurking in the wilds waiting for you. Okay, sounds kind of ominous, very eldritch. If Wayne had started his turn in a wilderness space, he would have been devoured. That character just would have died. Doesn't matter how much sanity or how much other health he had. With that curse in place, if he'd started a turn in the wilderness, that's it. You did.
My favourite cards in this game are the dark packs.
Yeah, I'm looking at the dark packs right now. So there are four dark packs. I think there's a fifth one around here somewhere that I was holding on to.
At some point in the game, you may make a horrible deal with the devil, essentially.
It might seem like a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
And then at some point, it may flip over. And it may be something not too terrible, like you lose some health and sanity, someone comes and breaks your legs. that's the best thing you can hope for.
Yeah,
or potentially, you have accidentally made a pact with the dark man, and you are devoured. You just die. Or you've made a pact and you can sacrifice another player instead. And they just die.
Oh, gross.
That one is incredible. That's
your choice.
I love that so much. Those cards are incredible. I mean, it adds a lot to the fun and replayability of this game. Because it's not like, oh yeah, you get this magic spell and you cast a spell and it does this effect. No, no, no. You cast this magic spell and it might do something horrible to you because you didn't quite cast it right. You got the incantation wrong. And I think that's a wonderfully thematic element.
Yeah, I love the double-sided nature of the spells.
They're great.
You're like, I'm going to be a wizard. Oh God, I'm insane.
Oh God, it's terrifying. The flesh ward, I think we used in our game, which I love the imagery of it. Yes, you can prevent someone taking some physical damage, but the horror of seeing their flesh rebuild and mingle and become, you know, and bubble up as it heals freaks you out. It's just, great stuff. Great stuff. Alrighty, so let's move on to the theme gameplay interaction. This is going to be a great little chat here. Simon, does this game feel thematic? And does the gameplay work together with the theme?
Yeah, if it hasn't become clear enough already with us gushing over it, it's... You have to immerse yourself in it. If you are looking at this purely mechanically, I don't think you'll get much out of it. If you jump in both feet, all six tentacles, and really throw yourself into this world, as Tom says, basically a minion, a mug, a mundane person trying to...
Who is going to die, but will try to make a difference.
Yeah.
Fumbling, hopefully, to try and make an impact on the overall progression of the game.
Yeah,
I think the theme is great, and it is extended through every item card, every monster, every encounter, any spell you take. The whole thing is just oozing.
Yeah.
Oozing with character and the correct level of cultural depth.
It's right exactly where it needs to be. And another lovely bit of theming is when your character dies in the game, there is an opportunity to go and, as your new character or one of the other players at the table, can go and potentially collect that dead character's stuff. And every character on the backside of the character card has individual text which will give you a test depending on if they went mad or if they physically died or crippled or killed. Yeah. And it's brilliant. It's a wonderful way. Have you got an example there, Tom?
Yeah, so this is Simon's second character, Jacqueline. If she had gone insane and you then went and found where she had dropped off the map, we leave her token behind. Someone can go there. They can encounter her or try and find her in that space. And it says, you visit Jacqueline in the asylum and claim her belongings. You gain all of her possessions. She seems lost in her own world, talking to visions only she sees. You do your best to interpret what she's seeing based on what she says, and you would test lore if you succeed. You have a clear idea of what she's experiencing, and you can retreat doom by one. So it's worth doing.
Yeah, the doom counter can go
back. You
can
reclaim some of the possessions that were lost. Not everything, but most of the possessions that were lost. And you can try and claw back some of the progression of doom, which is the big doomsday clock counting down to the end of the world.
It's wonderful. And each one of those is completely unique. Completely unique writing, a little unique encounter, and potentially a unique bonus, depending on how that person died or went mad.
Hmm.
What about you, Tom? How do you feel about the theme and the theme gameplay interaction in this game?
I love it. The mythos for Lovecraft is brilliant. I've been a big fan for years.
Yeah.
I've played a bunch of Call of Cthulhu in the past, the tabletop RPG. I've played a few video games that have been made in that sort of vein. I've played this. I've got Elder Sign, which is very similar to this. It's sort of a slightly boiled down version with no big map. I would really like to play Arkham Horror, which I haven't managed to get around to playing
yet. I have the game.
But it also shares a lot of the same sort of DNA as things like Mansions of Madness.
I will echo all of that, and not to belabor the point too much, this is a theme-heavy game. Mm. The mechanisms are actually relatively, it's a solid game. It's a Fantasy Flight production. I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, in a weird way, I actually kind of like playing this game, going in knowing that you are severely outmatched and just sort of hoping for the best.
And when you win, it's just a humongous bit of joy.
It's such a payoff when you do win, because you lose a lot.
Quite. Okay, so let's talk about the gameplay flow. Simon, how do you feel about the turn length?
Relatively quick.
It's two actions, pretty snappy. Yeah.
As the least experienced of the players in this current one, with sat next to you two, I'm the only one here who doesn't own this game. You can understand my somewhat slower pace. But yeah, you're essentially only able to do a limited amount of stuff. Therefore, unless there's a lot going on, which there often is, it's generally straightforward, pretty quick. You know, this is one of the main things of the game. It's part of its design, is you're often tied for attention.
Yes.
You're trying to do three different
always
things.
Always too many things going on for you to try and deal with everything at the same time.
Yeah, it's brutal.
So I might be in San Francisco with a clue and an open gate, an open portal to the netherworld, but I also need to get myself two spaces into the sea to go and take on the thing that's been spotted that's rising out of the ocean that someone's reported a rumour that something else is going on.
Uh-huh.
I could do one of three things at that point. So it's really trying to work out
what's the biggest threat, maybe.
Yeah, what's going to kill us quickest? What can we let burn? London is the answer. London
London burn.
Yeah. Basically, a portal opened in London in this game, and monsters spewed out of it every single round with us paying absolutely no attention to it.
I think the portal started in London at the very beginning of the game, and we just never went there.
Yep.
It just got worse. But to the point where you cannot go there. It's just overrun.
Yeah. But as a cooperative game, which this obviously is, if you do find yourself particularly stuck on what you think your action should be, ask your teammates and they'll give you some guidance.
Mm.
And half the time it could be best guess, you know, potluck almost. Certainly when it comes to how will you roll those dice?
The complexity comes in making a judgment call on what you need to deal with first. It's a game about juggling priorities.
Absolutely that.
That turn length, relatively snappy. Do you agree, Tom, I guess?
Definitely. Like Simon says, you might pause the game at the beginning of the round and sort of discuss about who you want to go first for the round and if there's a way in which you can execute your actions to achieve something that might not be immediately obvious. But for the most part, certainly early in the game, it's move around, try and upgrade your skills, try and get some items, try and do something useful without feeling like you've wasted your actions, and that's quite quick to decide on.
I think the only thing that takes time really is the administration of the other phases of the game. So much like something like Nemesis, your turn might be relatively quick as it goes around the table, but then you've got potentially 10 minutes of admin.
Yeah,
which is the nature of it.
I was going to liken this to Nemesis in terms of that bag development being similar to the Mythos
event phase.
It's going through the procedure and going, has this happened? Then do this, then this, then this. If this has happened, then do this, then this, then this.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the encounter phase is actually also quite short, but the length is determined by the types of encounters that you're having. And you spend most of the time just reading out this nice little box of flavour. It's not...
Which I recommend you do every time.
It's not very heavy.
No.
In terms of complexity for the phase, it is just the Mythos phase where the bad stuff happens and you need to work out which order in which to execute everything.
Which things happen, if they happen, and then triggering them.
In what order and how screwed are you?
Yeah. How far does he bend you over? Right, okay, so let's talk about the clarity of the rules. How clear is this game to learn, Tom?
I learned this game a long time ago, and
I
don't think I've had to go back to the rules many times. I think it's definitely worth highlighting that it is quite a heavy game, and it's because of the administration and the sheer volume of components.
And potential interactions.
Making sure you draw from the right decks and that you're referring to the right tokens and the right conditions and the combinations of assets and the fact that certain assets and bonuses only combine in certain ways.
Some stack, some don't.
You can only stack certain bonuses. It's not a light game. And in Fantasy Fight fashion, it comes with a sort of a learn-to-play book, which is quite good and reasonably short. And it has a little rule summary glossary book that you can then dive into if you run into a fringe case where it's not clear how something is supposed to work or interact.
Let's talk about then, I'll come to you, Simon, in a bit, after you talk about that clarity there, Tom, where would you put the weight, the complexity weight?
I would probably put this sort of up around 3.5, maybe 4. It is a complicated game.
Like as you bolt more onto it as well.
Especially if you bolt on some of the expansions. And we're only really playing with the small box expansions here. Let's not even go into
there's
the
other
sideboard stuff.
Sideboards and maps you can add to it as well. Yeah.
It's hard to judge because so much of the game is heavily randomised.
Yeah.
But it is definitely a heavy game.
Yeah. Okay, Simon, how do you feel about the clarity of the rules from just the pure play and not admin perspective, and then where you feel the complexity weight sits?
Yeah, I think Tom encapsulated it very well. I'd say 3.5 to 4 in terms of weightiness. Obviously I'm learning from listening to you guys rather than sitting and reading the rule book myself. As I already said, there's quite a large number, relatively speaking, of symbols that you need to not necessarily cross-reference, but you need to keep in mind that there's these 5 main attribute skills, and then there's the 4 different omens, there's a doom track, there's the reckoning, there's
the mythos symbols and eldritch tokens, and what do they mean?
Although each individual thing is clear enough, it's the stacking and the combination of everything interacting together, I think, makes it a trickier one to learn, to get a more comfortable flow of it.
I'd stick this an easy 4 for me. I think this is it's a weighty beast. It's a meritrashy, which is typically trying to simulate as many different things as possible, right? It's simulating fighting monsters. It's simulating closing gates and having encounters and searching for treasure and stuff and buying things in cities and then resting when you get hurt. And then maybe your leg gets broken and then, or maybe you need to take a debt to buy some things. But then someone comes along and then you also have to deal with this big horror in the background. So it's trying to simulate a lot of things, which it does pretty successfully and thematically, but that it typically involves more weight. Much the same way as Nemesis, we're going to liken that again. The more things you simulate for the sake of theme, the heavier the game gets.
Yeah, everything you do, almost down to simple movement, is caveated with does this condition apply?
Yes.
You need to test whether you can do this. Have you prepared? Have you got this item?
Yes. You can move one space unless you do this, or unless you're delayed, in which case you can't, or if there's a monster that stops you, etc. So let's go to the final thoughts then. Simon, what do you like most about Eldritch Horror?
The theming really is, if you are into it, I've not played the Cthulhu RPG or any of the many other things that Tom reeled off a moment ago. I'm aware that they exist. This is probably the one I've played more in terms of in that Lovecraft universe.
Yeah.
I think it does the theme fantastically well, really evokes that if you're into it. I like how it insists upon the cooperative nature.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you will definitely not succeed. I like the toughness, but I'd say, I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
The toughness for me, even with a few games under my belt now, it's
too much.
It's to the point where I fear I'm not enjoying it as much as I should.
Okay.
I know not everything needs to be all guns blazing. I am the action man who can do everything. That's not the point of the game. But it's difficult to a point where I wouldn't, at certain points, I would not want to continue playing necessarily.
Yeah.
Being familiar with it enough to know that there's fun to be had beyond it, beyond that grinding difficulty point. I'm glad I'm familiar with it enough to be able to still enjoy it, but that's probably a drawback for a number of people, as it can be.
So that's kind of what you don't like, is potentially the very high difficulty rate, which is totally fair.
Yeah, if it's what you're after and you want something to be incredibly challenging, then this will totally float your boat.
Yeah.
But it can also be a drawback if you want something that's slightly more accessible.
Yeah. Tom, likes and dislikes. What do you like most, and is there anything you don't like?
I like the experience as a group of getting spanked over and over again by an ancient one.
Yeah.
By various flavours of giant evil monsters. To be serious, I do, because it is a difficult game, it's a swingy game, and it's a co-op game, I don't mind losing this sort of game, because it's a collective struggle, and it tells a good story even when you do lose.
Yeah.
I don't feel frustrated by the game even after I've lost it many, many times. We had a very close game today, and I've already come to terms with it.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get murdered again.
Yeah, definitely.
The downside, as much as I do like it, it is very heavily randomized, and you can lose this game or get set back so far in this game that there is no sort of perceivable way to win it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in that zone where it's difficult but achievable, it's fun. If you just get completely railed on for the first few rounds and people are dropping left, right and center, it can end very quickly and it's a bit unsatisfying. Similarly, doesn't work with high player counts. I have tried it with 8. It was a horrible experience and I would never recommend
it. No, definitely. I will say that I love very, very hard cooperative games, and this definitely is, as Simon says, one that floats my boat. It's absolutely savage. So one thing to note before you go into this game, if that's not what you're into, this is not for you. I love the Lovecraftian theming. It's dripping in every single element. You'll play through the game and you'll have a wonderful story. Me as Charlie Kane, the politician, you know, I was dishing out stuff for everybody. I was, you know, greasing people's palms, getting people gear. Eventually I ended up with an entourage. I had some hired muscle, a private investigator. I had a personal assistant and a whip. The less we talk about that, the better.
And then you went insane, running at Cthulhu.
And then Charlie had a rush of blood to the head and ran towards the giant, unfathomable abomination.
So I pictured you on an unnecessarily and possibly anachronistic speedboat.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So all of that good stuff. I think it's a phenomenal, great production that still holds up. I mean, it's not massively old, but it's a throwback in its game design.
Yeah.
And I think it's wicked for that in itself. What I don't like about the game, you're right, Tom, it does not scale. It should be for 1 for 5 maximum. Really 4, to be fair. And I don't like the fact that there are some expansions which give this game necessary functions, like the focus mechanic we talked about. Aside from that, I think this is a wonderful production. It's a great experience. You'll get your money's worth. Tons and tons of hours of, I say fun, stress.
Shared suffering.
Shared suffering. There is fun to be had in a shared struggle.
It is fun, yeah. Okay. There's no denying it, but it comes with its shares of stress.
Absolutely. Okay, so the conclusion, last word on Eldritch Horror by Fantasy Flight. Tom.
Or however it's pronounced.
How do you even say that? Oh, well, yeah. The final thoughts.
we're genuinely lost a level of sanity by trying to read a word that starts with an R and an apostrophe.
And then an L and a Y. R apostrophe L-Y-E-H.
I genuinely, as someone who enjoys words and foreign languages,
that's a good one.
My guess is as good as yours, really. But
unbelievable.
Jehanthle. Yeah, sure. Sure. Of course, Tom.
Sure. Sai, final thought.
Prepare to die.
Accept
the fact that you will lose. Do your best to enjoy it anyway. As I've said, there's a lot of enjoyment in there. It's just quite a standalone game in your expectations.
Yep, I agree. Come into this prepared, ready to rock, ready to die a glorious death, and you'll have a blast. Alrighty, thanks for listening to Board Stupid. Subscribe to us for updates and to get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Board Stupid UK, spelled B-O-A-R-D. You can also find us at our home, anchor.fm/BoardStupid, again spelled B-O-A-R-D, and anywhere you can find your favourite podcasts. If you like our content, do us a massive favour, give us a 5-star review wherever you can review us, and share the links to the episodes on social media. If you've got any feedback, comments or questions, stick it in the comments below, because we'd love to hear from you. Do you want to play this game with us? How do you pronounce? How many investigators does it take to stop an ancient one? Well, it's not three. Would you like to hear more about our Lord and Master Cthulhu? Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again real soon.
The sigils aren't holding. We're doomed.